Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Mark Howard, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Scheduled to be joined shortly by Corey Curtis from News 2, so we're efforting to get Corey on the show. Right now, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Now, Mark, it was a busy weekend in the world of sports. You had Stanley Cup playoffs, NBA playoffs, MLS action on Friday night here in Nashville with New York as well, NASCAR, U.S. Open. What did you enjoy the most this weekend in the world of sports? College World Series as well, obviously.
Boy. I enjoyed the Vandy game, but I love the U.S. Open. Have not picked up a golf club in 15 years, but I still love watching golf.
Yep.
Especially in the majors. And what a great story, Jon Rahm. You know, 2 weeks ago, you know, at the tournament won by six shots and got disqualified basically for testing positive for COVID-19.
Yep.
Essentially like $1.5 million out of his pocket. And then comes back and wins the Open with just two incredible putts on 17 and 18. Louis Oosthuizen, you know, bogeyed 17, obviously.
Yep.
So he would have needed a birdie on 18. But, you know, that course, you know, at Torrey Pines was really amazing as the weekend wore on. It just got tougher and tougher. Brooks Koepka fell apart Sunday. Rory McIlroy did. DeChambeau just shot a 44 on the backside, you know, Sunday. That was just unbelievable. He looked like me out there. there are sometimes with DeChambeau that, you know, the guy's just a freak of nature. And other times he looks like a meathead out there, and he did yesterday. But there were others, you know, who stumbled. You know, the pressure was just incredible. And it was interesting to me that for years, Johnny Miller was chastised by a lot of critics for being too hard on the golfers.
Yep.
By saying that some of them choke. And they do. We all know that. And Johnny Miller's retort always was, I'm working for the viewers, not the golfers.
That's right.
And Johnny Miller, you know, to me, was ripped from stem to stern. And then he rolled out of bed, you know, like age 50 and won at Pebble Beach, which shut everybody up, which I loved. But anyway, aside from that, the NBC commentators were doing that all weekend,
yeah,
about talking about how the pressure, you know, affected those golfers, especially on those 8-foot putts. But, you know, good for Jon Rahm, who had not won a major. And it was a great story. You know, he and his wife just had a baby because of COVID-19. His parents had come from Spain to see him. And he had to wait 2 weeks to see him, and they got to see him win the Open. So I thought it was a really neat story. Listen, I'm a huge Tiger Woods fan. I miss him. You know, I think about 2008 at Torrey Pines and that, you know, epic Open win, you know, over Rocco Mediate in that playoff, you know, the putt he made on 18 and all that. But I thought that the Open was, you know, it was really fun. You know, you saw sort of the freak shot. The ball, you know, getting stuck in the tree.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which was, you know, totally bizarre. So there were just a lot of crazy things that happened in the Open. But you saw really, you know, really good players who have won majors before just totally disintegrate. You know, we still, you know, Jordan Spieth, you know, really, you know, couldn't, you know, get above par, for the tournament. And you just saw others. DJ, you know, never really made a run. But I thought Koepka was going to make a run. He got within, two shots on the backside, and just hopped on the bogey train, and that was it.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Corey Curtis from News 2. Corey, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
I'm good this morning, guys. How are you?
We are doing great. Appreciate you taking time to join us. And, Corey, we've talked about over the last hour or so this Titans team and expectations for this group heading in. I want to get your thoughts on just the excitement level that you sense from this Titans fan base. How excited are Titans fans about this team? How does it compare to maybe some of the glory days years with McNair and Eddie George and some of the good Titans teams we've seen along the way?
Well, I mean, I think hope is a big word. And look, fans love names. We know that. And so when you make a deal for a guy like Julio Jones, then the name gets them excited. I remember the year, I think Ed Reed got let go and Brian Urlacher got let go, and the fans wanted those two guys desperately. And I was just like, look, neither of their team want them anymore. Okay. Their teams know that they've got nothing left, and neither of them had anything left. And so fans get excited about names. The thing about Julio Jones is he's got something left. And so there is more to be excited about, but the difference with this team and those teams that you're talking about is that team went to the Super Bowl. That team went to the Super Bowl, and that team was proven on both sides of the ball. You know, you had a quarterback, you had a running back, you had, you know, Derek Mason, you had a very good offensive line, and you had a defense with Javon Kearse and Albert Haynesworth, and, you know, you had guys who made plays. This team is proven on one side of the ball right now, and it's exciting because that side of the ball also got Julio Jones. The defense has been revamped, and so I think that there can be cautious optimism, and I think for some people, just adding Julio Jones is enough to say, well, if we can play any defense at all, we're in the Super Bowl. And then I think there are other people who say, boy, our offense is going to be great, but man, our defense has got to prove it can do something. And I think that's probably the smarter approach, because while they've added players, that side of the ball hasn't proven anything yet. And that's the big difference between the two teams. One's proven it on both sides. The other one hasn't.
We're speaking to Corey Curtis, of course, longtime sports anchor at News 2.
How did that happen? How did I get old?
You're the dean, man. Wow. You are.
I'm hope. I'm hope now.
You are. There are certain things that come with it that I'll tell you off mic. Corey, yeah, the other interesting thing, yeah, and I think you did a good job of sort of, talking about the Titans, but it's kind of a generational thing. I mean, you know, the generation is finally, turned a little bit, and I'm sure that younger fans, have attached themselves, and you're right. I mean, the Titans don't have really an established star on defense, but they do have, a running back, a quarterback, and two receivers on offense. And it's kind of interesting to me how this perspective, is kind of generational.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it always is. It's like LeBron and Michael Jordan, Jordan guys are never going to get on completely on board with LeBron. Like I'm a Jordan guy. LeBron's amazing, but he's not Jordan. Okay. And that's the way it's always going to be with just about every team. But, and this team does have, and it's, another part of that, Mark, is this town, this team has been starved for stars for a long time. I remember when Ken Whisenhunt was the head coach. And boy, were those good days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I remember when the Cowboys came to town and just gave it to them. I mean, DeMarco Murray just went up and down the field. And I remember talking to him, my weekend guy at the Giant, Joe Leadingham. I was like, man, why can't the Titans have guys like that? I mean, and it ended up coming to them eventually. But, I mean, that Cowboys team just had players all over the field. Well, now, I mean, you brought up some names. You didn't bring up Taylor Lewan, who's a three-time Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
Kevin Byard is an All-Pro. They've got guys. Jeffrey Simmons, we think, is going to be a really good player. Bud Dupree is a guy who's a Pro Bowl player. He's got to prove he can still do it at that level coming off the ACL. But this is the first time in a very long time where you look at a team with a lot of star power on it. I always joked for years that well after Steve and Eddie were gone, the only jerseys you saw in Nissan Stadium were 9 and 27 because they were the only ones still worth buying. Well, now you've got a whole lot of jerseys you can buy with some really good players' names and numbers on them. And I think that's really the exciting thing for this generation, because we're also in a generation that roots for players more than it roots for teams. And this team has players worth rooting for.
Let me ask you, too, you know, we covered racing way back, you know, in your early days at two. And it was pretty much drilled into our heads that there was no way the Cup Series was coming back here unless Dover did something, you know, who owned the Super Speedway track. How amazing a story is yesterday, given that the Super Speedway, you know, was almost an antique mall, and people had pretty much given up on Cup racing ever coming back to Nashville. You know, the sport was, you know, diminished in terms of ratings, you know, in attendance around the country. And now all of a sudden, you know, it's coming back. And look what we saw just outside of Nashville yesterday.
Well, Mark, you're exactly right. And I've looked at this for years, and I have said the same thing over and over again. What the hell is NASCAR doing? And NASCAR had to be looking at itself yesterday and say, what the hell have we been doing for the last decade? How stupid are we? Why haven't we been here? This has traditionally been one of our largest TV audiences in the country year in and year out. And we completely abandoned these people. We abandoned them to go all over the country to people who really don't care as much. And now that these people who used to come to all our races all over the Southeast can't travel because it's too far. And so they spend all their money on Alabama and Auburn football now. And so, you know, yes, they finally came here. And you know what? It was exactly what I thought it would be. It was amazing. And fans showed up and fans loved it. And it is amazing that they've been able to get that track up and ready to go. But the fact that they had an awesome crowd and it was a celebration, no, that doesn't surprise me at all. And I think all it's going to do is feed even further into the fact that we are going to have two races. We're going to have a race there, and we're going to have one here at the fairgrounds eventually, because this town is moving forward. This town has money. It has disposable income. It has a growing population to populate these races. NASCAR is 15, 20 years late on this deal. They're finally here. They have to be ecstatic about being here, but they also got to feel a little bit dumb about not being here. That's my take.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Corey, last thing for you here. College World Series action this weekend with Vanderbilt and Tennessee. Vanderbilt gets it done, coming up with some clutch plays at the end. They win a walk-off marathon game in the 12th inning. Not as well for Tennessee and Tony Vitello and company. What stood out to you about Tennessee and Vanderbilt in the College World Series in their opening games this weekend?
Well, I think it was a good definition of a team who's been there before and a team who hasn't. I mean, if you've never been there, it's kind of an awesome experience. You know, and these Vanderbilt guys have been there. The head coach has been there. And they, you know, they fell behind. They didn't panic. They kept playing. They put the pressure on Arizona, and they won the game. And, you know, Tennessee went and lost 6-0. It happens your first time out there. And so, you know, I tend to think that this Tennessee team is a tough team. And I think it's kind of, you know, an energetic bunch. I covered South Carolina for a long time, and I was there when Ray Tanner took them there for the first time, and they lost their first game 13-1 to Georgia Tech, and everybody thought, oh my God, this is embarrassing. What a short trip, what a horrible trip it was going to be. They ended up being there for 9 days because they played from the loser's bracket all the way back to the championship game. So Tennessee's not done. I think they've got the right kind of guys to bounce back. But having said that, going to Omaha is different. It's tough. I mean, the platform is awesome, and you know, usually experience is really, really important. And I think leadership is really, really important. And we know Vanderbilt's got awesome leadership.
Corey Curtis from News 2 has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joins us every Monday at 8 o'clock. Corey, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us, and happy Father's Day.
All right, thank you. I was going to say that. Happy Father's Day, Mark. I hope you had a good day yesterday.
Thanks, bud.
Absolutely. Corey Curtis joins us every week here on Mondays at 8 o'clock. When we come back, We'll react a little bit to what Corey had to say there. Get back into the College World Series as well. A big win for Vanderbilt. What does it mean for the Doors as they move forward here with Jack Leiter coming up on the mound today as well? We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. This Wednesday, it's your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Pick to Click, brought to you by Camarena Tequila. If you correctly guess which player scores a goal in the game this Friday night, you win a prize pack and a four-pack of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Participate this Wednesday morning at 9:45 a.m., your next opportunity to participate in Nashville SC Pick to Click. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Mark Howard, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. A big win for the Doors this weekend in Omaha, 7-6 in 12 innings against Arizona. Jason Gonzalez, the walk-off winner, single up the middle, and the Doors get it done. Gonzalez, a couple of big hits in that game, including a game-tying two-run home run in the fourth. Carter Young, a big home run in the game as well. And, Mark, it felt to me, and I thought Corey Curtis put this well in the last segment as well, felt to me like a team that not afraid of the moment. They've been there before. Their coach has been there many times before. And I thought Vanderbilt, even when things started to get a little hairy and they got down in the game, they never panicked, and they were just able to find their way back into a situation where Carter Young hits a big hit, even in the last inning, in the ninth inning, when they lose the lead and it's 6-6. I thought they had a couple opportunities to win it in extra innings as well, and then ultimately a big hit by Jason Gonzalez gets it done.
Well, that's – it should be better said that the Vanderbilt is a team that is prepared for Omaha through the whole season, through its process.
Yep.
Because technically, on the roster, not a lot of guys have been to Omaha or been part of the College World Series. But Tim Corbin, from the crazy run they have to do, that makes them all throw up, by the way, to begin practice, everything is geared towards reaching Omaha.
Yep.
And they play a tough schedule, out of conference. Second to none. They travel a couple of times to get used to playing the highly ranked teams, in places that aren't Hawkins Field. And I think that's worked for them. But Corey's right. For Tennessee, this is really only the beginning. If we're having the same conversation in 10 years, we're going to be talking about a Tennessee team that hopefully, if Tony Vitello stays, will have made multiple trips to Omaha, won some national championships, and they would be a lot more similar to Vanderbilt then than they are now. They're very talented, and maybe that game will allow them to be a better team moving forward. And Corey's right. It's a long trip through the loser's bracket, but it can be done. And Tennessee certainly has the wherewithal. They don't have great starting pitching depth, but offensively, they're a really good team, and they can outscore you. So I thought they were sort of overwhelmed by the moment, in the loss to Virginia. And believe me, Abbott and Wyatt, the two pitchers for Virginia, were phenomenal. And Tennessee did squander some scoring opportunities. But want to see them bounce back, though. It would not be good, to be 2-and-done.
It would not. And Tennessee taking on Texas tomorrow in the loser's bracket, an elimination game between Tennessee and Texas. Vanderbilt tonight against NC State. Jack Leiter will be on the mound for the Doors. And maybe the most impressive part of Saturday for me, for Vanderbilt, was, Kumar Rocker and the defense, really, in the first inning, they had some miscues, had some mistakes. Rocker settled in. I think he retired 15 in a row after that. And then they got to him again in the seventh, and you had to go a little bit deeper into your bullpen, and they've gone in the regional and in the super regional as well. But to be able to overcome that with an offensive team like Arizona, we knew coming in the game, I think they were hitting 329 as a team on the season coming into the game. So obviously they've got some pop. They can hit the ball very well. You didn't get, you know, a vintage rocker performance, and you're able to still win, keep yourself in the winner's bracket, and move ahead now with Leiter. I think that's a big deal with Leiter coming in today. And if he pitches anything like he's pitched in the regional and super regional, could be in pretty good shape against NC State today.
If he can spot, you know, his breaking ball, his second and third pitches, he's unhittable.
Yep.
And I think it's good that he went through a couple of games where he got touched up. I just feel like sometimes, you know, that feeling of invincibility, you know, is kind of, you know, really isn't necessarily valid. And a lot of times a guy in that situation will give up some runs and he won't know what to do.
Yep.
So, you know, Jack Leiter has sort of been through the ringer. He's had a couple of tough outings, but I like Vanderbilt's chances tonight against a very good NC State team, a team a lot of people felt like, you know, might be, you know, the underdog to watch in this World Series.
Yep, and it seems like Carter Young is finding his way again offensively. He hits the homer in the seventh inning the other day to put Vanderbilt up 6-5. He's been such a force offensively for them all season long, so good defensively as well. But coming back from the injury, he's a switch hitter. He launches the two-run home run on Saturday to give Vanderbilt the 6-5 lead. Now, it's not the most potent Vanderbilt lineup that we've seen. I mean, they've certainly had, I think, some deeper lineups and lineups with more power to it. But just the different things that this lineup could do with, you know, Javier Vaz in there, Enrique Bradfield, we've talked a lot about him on the show as well, and their ability to change things in the running game and really put pressure on other teams that way on the base paths. I mean, I thought, especially in extra innings the other night, you know, they had a couple pass balls, Arizona did, and you know, I thought a lot of it was there was some pressure. Javier Vaz, I mean, he was taking like a six-step lead off of first base and just causing havoc that way. Just those two specifically, with Vaz coming in late in the season and finding a role for himself, and Enrique Bradfield playing the way he's played all year long, pretty good couple of threats on the base pass for Vanderbilt as well.
Yeah, I mean, they did what they had to do. You know, and like you said, bad first inning, three errors, you know, before Gonzalez's game-winning hit. They were 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position, which is, you know, not a stat I'm sure, you know, Tim Corbin was thrilled with. You know, they're gonna see a good pitcher tonight in Sam Heifel. He hasn't lost since April 3rd. He's won 10 of his last 11. So, you know, this is, you know, a guy, you know, who definitely he beat Arkansas, you know, which I'm sure got Vanderbilt's attention. So they've got another tough matchup. And watch this kid, Johnny Butler. He's been amazing. Drove in 5 runs in their win over Stanford, which was their opener in the World Series. So NC State, pretty formidable opponent.
Yep, pretty formidable opponent. And that'll be underway tonight for Vanderbilt at 6 o'clock. Jack Leiter on the mound for that game, and we'll see if Vanderbilt could continue rolling along here in the College World Series. We'll continue the discussion on the College World Series when we come back. Dive a little bit deeper into Tony Vitello and the Tennessee Vols as well. Can they stay alive against Texas in the loser's bracket in an elimination game tomorrow in Omaha? We'll get to that coming up next. ESPN 94.9 is the home for Nashville Sounds baseball. Tomorrow, the Sounds return to First Horizon Park and begin a 6-game series versus the Charlotte Knights, the AAA affiliate of the Chicago White Sox. Nashville Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans and 312 Pizza Company. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well.
Wow, Boogie Wonderland.
Yeah, buddy. What a jam.
Gotta love that.
When is the last time you heard that one, Mark?
About 3 days ago. It's my music.
That's right. It's a great song. Ryan Porth spinning the tunes. Coming back in today on Robbie and Rex Show. Mark Howard in for Joe today. Taking your thoughts on our text line. driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Right now, discussing the College World Series, Vanderbilt a big win. Tennessee did not go quite as well for the Vols in Game 1 in Omaha yesterday. They lose 6-0 to Virginia. Now an elimination game coming up tomorrow against Texas. So a battle of the UTs in the elimination game. Mark, it felt to me like a team that, and Tony Vitello talked a little bit about this as well, they just looked out of sync. They looked like they were indecisive at times. And it's one game. Things can, you know, you can fix it. You can rebound from this for sure as they move forward here. But it did kind of feel like one game where maybe the moment was a little bit too big for them and they were trying to do too much at times out there. And it just ended up in a performance where offensively they couldn't come up with the timely hits. Now, I thought early in the game they might be on the verge of breaking things open. I mean, they had two runners on base with no out, and then they couldn't get anybody over at that point. And that happened three times throughout the course of the game. First inning, fifth inning, sixth inning as well, where you've got two runners on, nobody out, and you're just not able to come up with those timely hits and those timely plays at that point. I thought too often a case of maybe the Vols not being as decisive as they needed to be.
Well, I also think, too, they kind of got gut punched there. You know, they had, first, as you mentioned, they had two runners on. Liam Spence hit it on the screws, but it was right to their second baseman, Max Kotler. And then the next two guys, Lipschitz and Beck, struck out. They get runners at second and third in the fifth inning, and, you know, they couldn't score. You can't get frustrated. But, you know, again, this is baseball. You know, it's the old line. Momentum is only as good as your next day's starting pitcher.
That's right.
So we'll see how Tennessee does, if they can get off the mat, because you generate a little bit of momentum. You know, you win this game. Going through the loser's bracket is a daunting task. But for Tennessee, I think it's doable.
So you mentioned earlier in the show with Tony Vitello, obviously he's done a great job with this Tennessee team, getting his team to Omaha for the first time since 2005. Texas A&M's spot has been filled. LSU's job still open. To me, if Vitello was going to leave and not be back at Tennessee, it's probably the LSU job that would be the case for. How concerned would you be if you're a Tennessee fan? Do you think that Tennessee has done enough, committed enough at this point, where you don't worry about Tony Vitello leaving if you're a Vols fan?
Well, you never say never. I mean, you're crazy if you do that. But I'm sure Tony Vitello notices that Paul Menieri had a good run at LSU, but he won only one national championship. His predecessor, Skip Bertman, you know, won five national titles at LSU and before that Miami. Now, it was a different game when Skip Bertman was coaching.
Yep.
There wasn't as much parity, much harder to win a national championship. And Menieri had a good run, but their fan base, believe me, was ready for him to retire. And it doesn't help with Skip Bertman at every game. It's sort of like John Wooden, you know, when he would sit, you know, at UCLA games, and the guy on the bench, was trying to win just one, you know, after Wooden won so much. Tony Vitello doesn't have to worry about that at Tennessee. First of all, they're happy he's there. Yeah, you know, if the program slips, he'll get the requisite criticism. But he's got a chance to build something. They're going to improve the facilities, and they will. You know, Tennessee will spend. I can't imagine why he'd want to leave. And he can win a national championship at Tennessee. He's already proven that with his recruiting. I would love for him to stay. I think it'd be great for the Tennessee Vanderbilt rivalry, and I just think it'd be good for the SEC if Tennessee becomes, you know, once again a heavyweight.
So, what do you think about college baseball in this state, in this market? Obviously, Vanderbilt, we know what they are. We know what they've been for the last decade plus with Tim Corbin. I mean, going back to, you know, David Price in his days of being recruited here. Vanderbilt has turned into a monster and a powerhouse on the college baseball level. Now that you have Tennessee kind of entering into this mix for the first time with Tony Vitello. What do you think of this market in terms of what it could be like for college baseball, the interest level as well? And what do you think this run does with both Tennessee and Vanderbilt in Omaha at the College World Series?
Well, I think it's great for, you know, us in the media would say it's great for business.
Yep.
Because, you know, two schools that we talk about a lot are there and could both win. Vanderbilt has obviously earned its place as one of the preeminent athletic college athletic programs, not only in the state, but in the country. You know, Tim Corbin, second to none, you know, at his profession. And I think, listen, you know, Vanderbilt fans will tell you, you know, Tim Corbin had a couple of chances to leave, and he decided to stay here. And it has been to Vanderbilt's benefit. I mean, what he has built is just incredible. But give Vitello credit. In just a short time, in 3 years, he's got him going to the – I think it's 3 years.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah. Third-year NCAA tournament, World Series. That's pretty impressive. So it would lead you to think that this is no fluke. And, you know, he'll build this program up to where it's a perennial power. I think it's all good. I mean, they filled up Lindsey Nelson Stadium in Knoxville. Tennessee baseball has once again become a really hot item. And I think that's absolutely good for business.
Well, I think it is. I just wonder, like, what's the staying power here? Because, look.
No, I think Corbin, listen, Vanderbilt's going to be – I mean, you don't know. You really don't know. And I could give you a lot of different examples. When I went to college, when I went to Ithaca College in the late 70s, Cornell lacrosse was a dynasty. Richie Moran was the coach, you know, and I could name you a bunch of coaches, you know, who were, who would tell you that Richie Moran hung the moon. But, you know, eventually the lacrosse program kind of petered out. Richie Moran had a winless season before he retired. So you never know. You never take success for granted. And I don't think Tim Corbin's built that way. I think, you know, as long as he's there, you know, they're going to be competitive. Recruiting in college baseball is insane.
Yeah.
Because you're recruiting kids who won't even play for you.
Yeah.
You know, kids who are going to go in the draft. You know, Vanderbilt's, you know, got a shortstop from Texas, I think. That's going to go in the top 10 that'll never play for him. So I think both programs have a chance for staying power. With Corbin, you know, he's demonstrated that he can sustain, you know, that success there, that it's just not a fluky one-year thing. And for Vitello, you know, he's got that challenge. You know, you don't take success for granted. You know, for Tennessee – everything went their way this year, and I think they tell you that. That doesn't mean it's going to happen that way every year. But Vitello's off to a good start, and I can't see why he would leave.
Yeah, and now the challenge for Tennessee is taking on Texas tomorrow in an elimination game at 1 o'clock, and you would think Tidwell would be on the mound for the Vols at that point as well. And now the challenge of going through the loser's bracket, if you can get past Texas, is – you got to play more games, and you got to go deeper into that bullpen. And that was a concern I had about Tennessee coming into this tournament. If you ended up in the loser's bracket, how deep can you go? Like, how deep are you comfortable going if you're Tony Vitello into the rotation, into the bullpen? And can you find a way to survive at that point? I mean, I feel like from a depth perspective, maybe the bullpen depth not quite there yet for Tony Vitello in this program, as it is with some other teams in this tournament so far. We're about to find out very quickly how deep they are in their pitching rotation and in their bullpen as well.
Yeah, and, you know, and all of a sudden you've got kids who had up and down seasons who are now thrust in the highest pressure situations they've ever faced in their careers. And it'll be interesting to see how they react.
Yeah, yes, it will be. And that starts tomorrow for Tennessee against Texas. Taking your thoughts on the Vols on our text line all show long, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. I would expect and hope Tennessee tomorrow play a little bit more like that that team we've seen all season long in terms of the way they approach the game. I think part of what's made this Tennessee team so much fun to watch and part of why there's been a little bit of hostility at times directed their way is their attitude.
They play with a swagger. They do. No doubt.
And I felt like that was totally missing yesterday. Tony Vitello talked about that after the game in terms of just not being as, you know, passionate and not being as, you know, as convicted as they normally are. I would expect that to change tomorrow against Texas. Win or lose, I don't know if that's going to end up making the difference. I would hope some of that swagger comes back for Tennessee tomorrow against the Longhorns.
And you can't say that they're just, you know, a one-trick pony in terms of, you know, they can only win at Lindsey Nelson Stadium.
No.
They won the SEC tournament. No small thing. So let's see more of that.
When we come back, we will switch gears, get into a little NBA talk. Much different setup for the conference finals this year than we expected heading in. Is this good or bad for the NBA? Has this increased your watching experience on the NBA? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Mark Howard, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to have Darren McFarland coming up to begin the 9 o'clock hour. We'll get his thoughts on the weekend that was for NASCAR in Nashville. That coming up to begin the 9 o'clock hour here in about 15 minutes or so. Right now, talking NBA, it's a much different looking conference final setup this year for the NBA. The Phoenix Suns and LA Clippers got underway in the Western Conference finals yesterday. Phoenix taking a 1-0 series lead there. And then Atlanta and Philadelphia last night in Game 7. Atlanta takes down the Sixers. The Sixers choke again. And Atlanta finds themselves in the Eastern Conference final against the Milwaukee Bucks. That means no LeBron, no Kevin Durant, no Steph Curry in the conference finals for the NBA. Mark, as you look at this setup for the NBA with Phoenix, the Clippers, now in the East with Milwaukee and Atlanta as well, some different blood in the conference finals. Is this a good thing for the NBA? Or NBA executive sitting here today saying, oh, goodness, we don't have much of our star power left in these playoffs, especially the superstars like Durant, LeBron, you know, Kyrie, all these different players?
Well, first of all, I took great joy in seeing the Nets lose.
I did too.
It was a great game. And the fact is, if Kevin Durant's foot is a few inches, even an inch back, the Nets win that game and win the series.
Just one shoe size smaller.
It's unbelievable that, that his foot was on the three-point line when he made an incredible shot, descended into overtime. And I was sure the Nets were going to win that game, and the Bucks gutted it out. You know, to their credit, you know, playing good team defense, and you know, you basically got to stop Durant. Harden was really a shell of his former self with the hamstring injury.
He was, and you know, Kyrie hurt as well. It just Brooklyn fell apart, and KD did everything he could do. I mean, had almost 50 points again, but just
that
wasn't
was the team
enough.
That was sort of, you know, engineered to be, you know, the accumulation of the superstars.
Yep,
and it didn't work. I mean, Blake Griffin went over there and, you know, served a decent role, and but it didn't, you know, it didn't happen for him. I mean, they had Jeff Green, they had some pretty good supporting players. You know, good for the Bucks, who have been through their share of trials and tribulations. Mike Budenholzer, the former Hawks coach, you know, gets to go up against his former team.
Yep.
And I don't think he expected that. I don't think anybody expected the Hawks to make it to the NBA semifinals. Trae Young has been unbelievable. He had 21 last night. Kevin Huerter was really the big hero.
He was.
You know, for the Hawks. If you don't know who he is, he's a Rojo, redhead, out of the University of Maryland, had 27 and, you know, did a great job on the defensive end. And the fact is, Ben Simmons came up
Oh, gosh.
Microscopic. He had 5 points, Only got to the free throw line for two shots. He's not a good free thrower anyway. And he admitted after the game that that he needed to step up offensively. And, you know, being a Celtics fan, I'll always love Doc Rivers. But the fact is, Doc Rivers can screw it up in the best of situations. But, you know, good for the Hawks. Made an in-season coaching change, and Nate McMillan has been phenomenal. So good for them. And that makes for a compelling series. And in the West, you got Chris Paul out with COVID issues.
Yep.
And you got Kawhi Leonard out for the Clippers. So who knows which direction that one goes. I would love to see the Clippers win a title. You know, they're just the stepsons, the stepchildren at Staples Center to the Lakers. And it would be pretty cool if they won. That was a pretty good atmosphere for them in game one, but or for the clinching game in game seven. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, the Suns, again, were a team that acquired Chris Paul. But it was really interesting what they talked about, that their executives, when they acquired Chris Paul, didn't ask what he could do for them, but what they could do for him.
Yep.
And, you know, they've done a really good job with that team, and look where they are.
So, Ryan Porth, as you look at the Final Four now in the NBA, with the Clippers, the Suns, the Hawks, and the Bucks, still some star power there, some of which is now hurt or unavailable at the moment. Do you like this? Is this bad for the NBA? How do you think this shapes up with a much different-looking Final Four than we're used to?
I'm intrigued by it because it's all new blood. Like, off the top of my head, have any of these teams won a title? Did the Hawks win way back?
The Bucks have way back.
Right.
The Bucks did with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and who was it?
Was it Moses Malone?
Not Moses Malone.
Oscar Robertson?
Oscar Robertson,
yeah.
Good God.
Good gracious.
Bearcat. Whiffed on that one.
Mm-hmm.
The Hawks won back in St. Louis in the 50s.
Yeah.
So, and the Clippers and the Suns have never won. So I like...
A lot of Charles Barkley throwbacks this week.
Yes, it is. So I'm intrigued by the newness of these teams being this far into the playoffs. However, I enjoy the theater. I enjoy the NBA Finals with LeBron James and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and the stars, the typical superstars going head to head. Like if it's, say, Milwaukee Phoenix is the Greek Freak versus Chris Paul, is that really going to do it for people?
Probably not.
I don't think it will for me. I mean, I'll watch, but I don't know if I'll be as into it as, say, like the Cavaliers and Warriors NBA Finals back in like 2016, when that was great theater all around.
Now, Nashville Predators director of broadcasting, among other things, Bob Cole, a rabid Milwaukeean Bucks fan, is all over this.
Oh yeah.
It's a big moment for the Bucks the other night.
I mean, all of these teams kind of got monkeys off their back getting to the conference final. So that aspect of it is cool. I do wish there was one big superstar. Not that the Greek Freak isn't, but I don't think
he's not the same level yet as LeBron and KD.
And maybe this is
it. Not. He's a star, but he's not on that level.
But maybe this is his coming out party, and if Milwaukee wins it, he puts himself closer to that territory.
Could be. I mean, look, I think if it ended up being Milwaukee and Phoenix, I think it could be a pretty great series. The question is, like, is anybody going to watch?
Sure.
That's the thing. Like, I think the basketball would be great.
I think the winner of the West, if they're healthy, if Kawhi plays and Chris Paul plays, the winner of that series will win the title.
Could be. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, I think lots of NBA fans love the newness of it. We've been accustomed to LeBron and or the Warriors for the last decade, but I think there's a problem with basketball because I find myself only tuning in at the end of the fourth quarter if it's close. What do you think of that, Mark?
Well, that's a commonly held belief among a lot of fans. You know, you want to know about an NBA game, just watch the fourth quarter. listen, yeah, I think the game is a lot better than it used to be.
I do too.
I don't think, you know, you don't have, you know, these teams just playing isolation or that. It's gone back, you know, it's gone back to the guards. You know, it's not a big man's game really anymore. Although, you know, the big men are a lot more athletic. Guys like Durant are just unbelievable. So I think the NBA is really as good as it's ever been.
I think it is too. And, you know, I've enjoyed the playoffs so far. Like, the game seven between Milwaukee and Brooklyn was awesome on Saturday night.
No doubt. I mean, you know, how can you not like a game like that? And, yeah, you got a Bucks team that, you know, looked kind of overmatched early. You know, and obviously the Nets injuries, you know, have been a major contributor. But Milwaukee hung tough, and they won in overtime, and I like that. And what a story is Trae Young.
Yeah.
Do you know who he was traded for?
I do not.
He was traded by Dallas for Luka Doncic.
Yeah, that's right.
I'd say both sides are happy with what they got.
Yeah. We'll see if Luka Doncic stays, by the way.
I was about to say it.
What in the world's going on in Dallas? Everybody's leaving. Carlisle leaves. He just says, I'm not coming back. Apparently Luka Doncic may not want to be there long term.
You know, I'm such a huge fan of Mark Cuban, but that organization has had so many issues, whether it's sexual harassment or suddenly disarray in the front office. And, you know, the article in The Athletic saying that a former professional gambler is really the most influential person in the organization, you know, to Mark Cuban. And that's, you know, one of the reasons, well, Donnie Nelson felt like he got fired, but Donnie Nelson didn't like it, and that soured his relationship with the Mavs owner.
Yeah, it's been a crazy, crazy few weeks there in Dallas with all the news that has come out of there now with Luka Doncic being kind of the latest to be involved with that. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Sean from Nashville, who wants to weigh in. Sean, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road. Hello, Sean. Sean, are you there? All right. We will see if we can reconnect with Sean coming up down the stretch. We got Darren McFarland coming up next. Real quickly, final thoughts on the NBA. I think the basketball has been great. I do think that the ratings are going to suffer because of the lack of star power left in the playoffs at this point. But honestly, I'm okay with 1 year of this. Like, I think next year Brooklyn will be back if they can stay healthy. And you can't convince me, like, if Kyrie and James Harden were healthy, they'd still be in the playoffs. I mean, they were totally dominant over Milwaukee in the first couple of games. So I think we're going to get back to a place where it's still going to be all about the stars in the NBA. That's what it's been for the last decade. And with the player movement that takes place, I think that's going to go back to what it is as they move forward here. I'm cool with 1 year of this, though, of kind of having some new blood in here and seeing what happens. I think the NBA might have needed that.
And we're going to see Marv Albert's final series.
Here we are.
As a broadcaster.
Yeah, absolutely. Legendary, wow. Marv Albert. Pretty crazy to think about on that front. When we come back, we'll be joined by Darren McFarland from Darren, Donick, and Chase. He was at NASCAR weekend at the Nashville Super Speedway. We'll get his thoughts on a big weekend here in Music City. That coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.